computer. Hi, everybody. My name's Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. I love saying that.
This is the non-formal.
I know.
You don't have to be so formal.
How about my slick back hair, though?
Mm-hmm. You look good.
I just got a haircut.
Mm-hmm.
$14.
Mm-hmm.
14 big ones.
It's expensive.
Yes. Hi, Millie. Hi, Courtney. Hi, Annie. Hi, Gemma. Hi, Mimi. Hi, Kristen. Hi, Judy. Hi, Karen. Hi, Nikki. And hi, Anita. How do we want to start this?
Well, I'll start it. So we are lucky enough to have author Gemma Hartley on the show. She was brought to our attention by an article she wrote for Harper's Bazaar a couple years ago. What year was that, Gemma? 2017?
Yeah, it was 2017, back in September 2017. So yeah, it's been a while.
It has. And it totally was sent to me by my friend Manisha because it resonated so much with her. And she's actually in the book, funny enough. So the book that Gemma wrote because of the viral sensation of her article is called Fed Up. And it's about emotional labor. And it's about something that has been very difficult to talk about. Todd and I had made many attempts to talk about it on Zen Parenting Radio, and we often couldn't find the right words, or maybe I couldn't in explaining, and Gemma's book was really helpful to me, and I think really opened up a big opportunity for conversation for us. So she's here today, for everybody who's here, if you brought a question, raise your hand, or you know what I mean, like
type in the chat box
that you have a question,
or do something. We have some questions, kind of. Just in case.
A few Team Zen people who can't be here sent questions, and then I obviously have questions, but I just didn't know. I didn't want to take up the time of the...
Yeah, this is really for our team, for the team to take advantage of this opportunity, so...
Well, why don't I start?
Why don't you start, sweetheart? That's
because
what I was going to say.
sometimes it's like too quiet. We need a question first, so...
I can't keep quiet.
That's right. Milk, too. So... Gemma, we kind of talked about that. Last time we talked with you was, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago because you were on our podcast last week, and this came up a few times. And I know this is kind of a question we always get about emotional labor, which is, it kind of reminds me of a sex talk where people are like, I need to have that talk with my significant other, or I need to bring it up as if it's like a one-time shot. And can you explain to everybody why this is an ongoing communication and that you don't have to deal with everything in 1 hour period of time? Like, can you offer either your personal experience or how to make this an ongoing communication?
Yeah. So I definitely thought that it was going to be a one talk done sort of deal. Harper's even had me write a follow-up article. I mean, like 2 weeks later, after it had published, to talk about how things had changed and how everything was, you know, magically better and the response guys were having to it. And I look back on that article, and yes, things were progressing, but there was also some backsliding that happened after that. It has to be an ongoing conversation. It's not something that can be one and done, because life doesn't stay stagnant. It doesn't stay the same, and the needs of everyone around us change all the time. So I think that this has to be an ongoing conversation. It has to be open communication, or else you really, you know, you're really going to backslide and find yourself in the same position.
And that's because that's the thing, is like, really, it comes up over and over again, not because you have a partner who's not listening. You know, this, I mean, there's like different levels to this, because there are some partners who get very defensive or don't want to have this discussion. But then there are some that are like totally open to it. But when you've been swimming in something for so long, sometimes you can't see how it shows up, even in the smallest things. And so, you know, just reiterating your point, Gemma, like, you can have the one-time conversation, but it's like learning a new skill, you know?
And as the husband in this twosome, I can say that I have plenty of examples of me backsliding or forgetting. We had a little bit of that yesterday.
Yeah.
How often does this happen in your household, Gemma? Like, where you're like, you have to like, okay, what's your husband's name again?
Rob.
How often are you like, okay, this is out of balance, we need to refigure this out? Is it yearly? Is it monthly? Is it weekly? How often does it happen in your house?
I'd say like monthly or every other month, we're usually having a conversation where I'm like, no, the balance is getting a little bit off. We need to, you know, recalibrate. We need to talk about it. I think it's happening less now because I feel like we're having more conversations about it. But yeah, it's not a one and done thing. And I feel like when we are having those times where I'm saying, let's reset, let's talk about it, it's not the same as those conversations in the beginning where we were really starting to try and figure out what needed to be balanced. You know, what do you need to start noticing? What do you need to show up for? Now it's more, you know, that forgetfulness or, you know, I've been trained not to look at emotional labor. So I'm kind of backsliding into that, you know, preset that I had before we started talking about it. So I think course correcting is a lot easier now than it was before.
Mm-hmm. It's like having the language so you don't have to like do a big, it's not about teaching or being like, let me tell you my experience. You already have the language. And, you know, the discussion that Todd and I had yesterday, and it was about a lot of things, not just emotional labor. It just kind of showed up in that way.
It started there
was I wasn't necessarily asking for a, like, you need to do this. Let's, you know, let's, you take these things, I'll take these things. It wasn't a, like a dividing and conquering thing. What I needed him to notice was what I was doing and why I was tired. So I wasn't saying, please take it or let's split it. I needed to, by the person I love and live with, be validated in, do you recognize that the reason, because sometimes Todd will, you know, say things like, well, that's just going to go smoothly because that always goes smoothly. And I want to be like, it went smoothly because of the things I put in place. And I'm not saying I controlled it. I'm not, but there was a lot of background work that happened that made that go smoothly. The reason the birthday party or the, you know, ballet performance went well is because I had bought tights a week ahead of time because I had, you know, made sure her hair was done because that's why it went smoothly. And I think the observer is just like, oh, it's easy. So, you know, sometimes can you talk about just validation of invisible work?
Yeah, I think this is one of the most important parts of finding that, you know, balance. I don't think it's about dividing and conquering or getting to 50-50. I think it's really about understanding what your partner is doing, understanding, you know, and seeing and validating the work that they do. Because that is what I think was the hardest part of emotional labor for me, especially when I wrote that article. And that's something in that follow-up article that I was writing. I said, you know, the changes that my husband was making, they weren't huge, they weren't life-changing, but they made me feel seen. Mm. And that was the big part of it. I felt like my work was being valued. And I, you know, I don't need the whole world to validate me. I mean, maybe I do, I'm a writer, but I really need my partner to say, yeah, I see you and the work you're doing is valuable. And, you know, we need you to do this work. You know, that's really powerful, and that it helps combat that feeling of exhaustion and that feeling of frustration when I know someone else is watching and saying, you know, wow, I really appreciate this work. I really have a deep understanding of this work. And I, you know, I know that you're doing it and I'm thankful for it.
Absolutely.
Judy just typed something in. Are you willing to ask the question directly to Gemma?
Sure.
Awesome. Go ahead. You're on.
So, hi, and thanks for being here. I guess my question is that my husband and I, we do share almost everything, the housework and the emotional labor, and he is appreciative. And as I said on the chat, like very few occasions we are out of alignment, and it's mostly when we are around his family and he just wants to chill out. And it doesn't happen often. His family is far away, so we only meet them maybe once a year or so. And I do try to give him the space he needs to be with his family, but like during a weekend or 3-4 days, every now and then I need his help, and I haven't found a way to say that without getting him defensive about it.
So I have dealt with this before as well, where we would go to his parents' house and we would have all the kids, and he would just be ready to, you know, throw back a beer with this family, sit on the couch. And that's very much the environment that he was raised in, where, you know, the men can sit around and do whatever. And so he reverts. And I've noticed he doesn't do it anymore, because we did have a few conversations about this. And I think what is really helpful is having a conversation before that trip, before we're going, you know, to visit the family. And he has to have a different sort of conversation with me when I go and visit, when we go and visit my family, because, you know, everyone's got this baggage when it comes to their family. And we kind of revert back to our teenage selves. And we, you know, we go back to the old way of doing things. And so, you know, with my family, it's that I get really high strung. My parents stress me out a lot. And he has to, you know, have a talk with me about, let's stay in the calm zone. You know, let's make sure that you're putting enough distance and boundaries up. And when it's his family, I'm saying, you know, make sure that you're still on as a father, make sure you're still being a part of this partnership. Not that I don't want you to enjoy your family, but I want you to blend that way of being with your family with also being with us.
That's good.
That's a great answer. I'm getting some comments just about the audio. So can you guys type in the chat box? I want to make sure that we're doing this right, because Annie and Millie and Kristen said they can't hear. So Kristen, Millie, Annie, you guys said that you had problems listening.
It's on now.
That Kristen said that. Mimi says it's breaking up.
I think so too. I think what's happening, everybody, is because people are joining, they're coming and going. So it's kind of breaking it up for us a little bit, because usually we have more consistent, like everybody's here at once. How's internet down here? Is it all right?
It says it's strong. I mean, it's on all bars. So.
Yeah. Like, we can hear everything fine. We can hear Gemma clearly. So I think that because there's a lot of, you know, people coming and going, it's breaking up.
Please keep communicating with me in the chat. And if it gets bad, we might have to, you know, restart or whatever. We'll try not to. In the meantime, I'm going to go over to Millie and see if we can listen to her. Millie, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Yeah. Yes. Okay, great. Gemma, thank you for being here. I have to tell you that your Harper's Bazaar article is one that I have forwarded to more people than any other.
Wonderful.
But I will say, I will also admit, embarrassingly, that the one person that I need to send it to, my husband, is not one that I have shared with, because honestly, I've been a little nervous about sharing it, right? And I'm curious to know, because I've read in your article some things, you know, you wrote about how your husband received it, you know, that he was feeling maybe criticized or that he felt guilty. I am actually curious about the steps you took, you know, in sharing this with your husband. Did you write the article and go, hey, honey, look at what I wrote, you know, or how did you end up, what was the process? And then it sounds like he got it, right? And how long did that take? And I know everyone would be different, but I'm just curious what your steps were. Because I am nervous about sharing with him, because I just have a feeling he is going to take it like, he's going to be hurt.
So a couple things to say about that. First, the Harper's Bazaar article, I wrote that really intending a female audience, and not realizing that it would go as viral as it did. So I am actually not sure that that is the best article to share with men, to show them, you know, sort of what emotional labor is, what it feels like. I think there are a lot of like great articles and podcasts that will not trigger that defensiveness as much. I think that, you know, some of the Zen podcasts are really great. I've listened to them with my husband, the ones that I haven't been on and the one that I have been on, which feel a lot more inviting, I think, to men than that article. As far as my process in writing it, I had written the article. I told my husband, you know, what I was writing about, and he didn't read it beforehand. He doesn't mind if I write about him. And I don't think he realized exactly what it was going to be like. So I told him on the day it published, I said, this is getting a lot of traction. It's going viral. you might want to read it now. And so then he actually read through it. I mean, he was aware that it was being written, but not quite aware of what it was. And so when he read it, he felt, you know, a little bit weird about it being out there, because he thought people were going to see it and think, oh, this guy is, you know, this terrible, lazy husband. And what I told him was, you know, yes, lots of people are sharing this article, not because everyone wants to bash on you, but because they see themselves in it. Mm-hmm. And I think that helped him a lot. And in the aftermath of that article, he really wanted to go through this process with me, to learn about emotional labor with me. So he was really involved in all of the conversations while I wrote the book. He was a person that I bounced ideas off of. He was the one that I went to really get that male perspective of what this looks like and feels like. And also, I, you know, write in the book that he was off of work for 4 months during the time that I wrote the book. He got laid off and I had him stay home with the kids and really take over a lot of the emotional labor that I would normally do. And so we were on a really fast track. When I think about how long it might have taken us had I not been writing a book on it, had he not been off of work for that time and really seen what it looks like, I think this would have been a much slower process. I think it could have taken a few years to get where we are now, rather than, you know, one very short year of really intense progress. And I think it does look different for everyone.
So just a few quick things. Thanks for the plug for the emotional labor stuff. I don't think we started, the first one we did was podcast 405, which is probably right around when the Harper's Bazaar thing came around, because Gemma gave you language. And I think you're right that guys do. I got defensive when I read it. So
I think the interview we did with Gemma 2 or 3 weeks ago, you were defensive, as mm-hmm. was I. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, you know, Mimi, you know, I think Gemma answered it plenty, but I don't think defensiveness, or not Millie, not Mimi, Millie, defensiveness doesn't go away. Because if you're talking about something new, then it's like, you know, like there's,
We're hardwired to defend our position. Like when Kathy first brought it up to me, I think I made a joke, even when we interviewed Gemma last week, was I would be like, yeah, but look how much better of a dad and a husband I am than my own father. So I think we're hardwired towards to defending our position. I do think that the interview process is probably a little bit more disarming. And what I mean by that is, so we've done 3 podcasts on it, podcast 405, 440, and then last week was 495. Millie, I would just invite you and the rest of the ladies that are on here to maybe start with that. Because we even did it in our Tribe Men's group. Like, we did a whole night based on Gemma's article. And these are guys that come in a circle every month and talk about their feelings. And there is a lot of guys that would be like, this just is not
true.
Like, they got, so I think your question is an important one, Millie. And I would also say, like, I think there's some husbands out there, and I would even set it up honestly, like, hey, here's an article. You're probably going to get triggered really, really bad, because I think that might be a little bit easier access to the guy that's reading it for the first time. But if you know your husband isn't going to, it's not going to land very well, because the article is, to Gemma's point, it's
written for women.
Mm-hmm. I like to be challenged, but I still get defensive, and a lot of guys don't like to be challenged at all. So I would say, if you don't think that they would receive the article really well, to go to the interviews that, or the podcast that Kathy and I have done, and it allows for a lot of different opinions, whereas just Gemma's voice, you know what I mean?
I do. I agree.
So, anyways,
yeah. I also think having you on the podcast really helps. You know, having a male voice, I think, does help men identify with the topic more. Another one I did was the Dear Sugars, which had Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond. And I think that's another really good one as an intro to emotional labor and to that topic.
I agree.
Millie, will you do a Google search on that and put it in the notes? Millie helps us with all that. So
thanks, Millie.
We're going to go over to Kim. Give her a second for it to unmute. Kim, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Can, yes.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
I just had a question about the your children seeing the emotional labor, and is it necessary for them to see it, or like they, you know, I always get the comment, well, you have nothing to do all day. What do you do all day? And I usually just go, oh, one day you'll understand. But you know, I want to go, ah, this is what I do. 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 And I know that they probably see it and they just think it's fun to pull my chain. My husband gets it. I mean, maybe not totally gets it, but he definitely gets it and he acknowledges it. And by no means is that where I'm having my issue. I'm curious about children and other people, not other people outside the house, but you know, how do you demonstrate without being overly critical? Mm.
So I think where I'm at, my kids are really young, so we don't have a lot of, you know, outright conversations about emotional labor. We do have talks about, you know, how we are taking care of each other, how we are taking care of our home to, you know, make sure that everything runs smoothly. But I think the biggest change that we've made in our household is that my husband thanks me for the work that I've done for that invisible labor. Because, you know, I think kids are by nature very narcissistic and they're really focused on their own stuff. But I think there is an impact to be made there when, you know, both partners are recognizing one another's work and valuing that work and saying that out loud. I know a lot of women are like, well, you know, my husband always expects me to praise him when he cleans the kitchen or when he notices to do something that I haven't asked him to do. And, you know, I get why that's annoying because it's not going both ways. And I think that the easiest way to do that isn't to say, let's stop thanking each other. There is no gratitude. This work is just our responsibility. But really showing that gratitude and vocalizing it, I think helps our kids say, oh, that's valuable work. They're saying, you know, thank you for that. That's valuable work. They appreciate that. And it's important and needs to be done.
Mm. I would just add to that, you know, the idea of anybody getting this, I don't know if it's really realistic because we are all, you know, I'll just speak from the guy's perspective. Like I'll have a killer few weeks where I'm like totally going above and beyond and doing everything that I need to do and then some. And then I just kind of get lost and I get frustrated and it's just, you know, we talk about parenting as being a dance. Relationships are a dance too. And there's no day that I'm going to arrive and say to Kathy, okay, I'm not going to screw up anymore on this. So I guess I would just like keep real expectations realistic.
Well, what I like about what Gemma just offered is it's something very practical and tangible, that something that can, you know, Kim, because like you said, this really isn't about your husband. It's about your children witnessing it. And so having this conversation with your husband about occasionally, can you at least name the things that I did and say, thank you for doing that because it went smoothly because of your effort. You know, when I think sometimes what we notice is when there becomes an expectation that things will be smooth. And again, I'm reiterating the invisible labor thing. And it's just like, oh, I'll just let the kids do that and it'll go smoothly. And that's not really how, and I'm not saying kids can't do it, but usually there's a lot of steps have been put into place. And if he could see them and acknowledge them when the kids are present, it gives the kids a better idea, I think, is, you know, just reiterating what Gemma said.
Well, I would throw in there that, you know, the example I think of is Christmas. Kathy is a really good at organizing Christmas, where we go, the gifts, Santa, everything. And I think of myself as a loving, considerate individual. Yet at the same time, over years, you just come to expect it.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is what happens. I show up, everything is wrapped, we open it, and then we go on to the next thing. And it's just very, I don't know, it's like a weird thing because I get lost and I forget, or it's just so easy to take your partner for granted.
Gemma, talk about holidays. Like, did you find in your research that holidays are like one of those big emotional labor times?
Oh yeah, Christmas was the one that came up the most often. And I think that's very true for most families, that is one where there are a lot of expectations, especially if you have, you know, young kids, school age kids, and they have all their Christmas parties going on, all of that stuff. And then you're also dealing usually with family. So you're either dealing with your family or your partner's family or bringing both families together. And there are a lot of dynamics going on there. So I think that holidays really push emotional labor into a new zone. And this is something that also Bridget Schulte talks about in her book, Overwhelmed. Her big example in her viral article kind of revolved around Thanksgiving dinner and how her husband was, you know, out making the turkey, like in the backyard, which took, you know, I check on it every couple hours. And he felt like he was doing his, you know, 50% by doing that. And she was dealing with, you know, dealing with the kids, dealing with the in-laws, dealing with all of the other intricate things going on and just sort of losing her mind over it. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading that and being like, yes, this is every Christmas or every Thanksgiving, you know, I feel like I am doing everything and he's just kicking back with a beer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what, how do we get past that to where we're both enjoying the holidays rather than one person enjoying and one person getting absolutely burnt out? I noticed I would get sick a lot after Christmas because I was just burning myself out and I would get to the end of it and I would feel like, you know, it had been successful, but I was completely depleted.
Yeah.
Annie.
Yeah, I was just about to say something about Christmas and, oh, the garage. I don't know if this is just me and my buddy, but when our kids were little, I would think cleaning out the garage was really helpful to my wife.
I don't go in the garage. That doesn't change my life
and it was,
at all.
It was just an excuse for me to think I was helping, and maybe I was helping this much. And it's kind of like a very cavemanish activity, so there's certain things that need to be done, but it's funny. My one buddy, Frank, who I run the men's group with, he's like, well, I was putting up the storm windows all day, you know, all day. And his wife was chasing after their two little ones on the weekend. And during the week, she's mostly on. And I guess if there's any guys listening, get a little more aware of what you're doing and how you're helping, because I was just excusing it as helping when in fact it really didn't help much at all.
It didn't change my experience in the least. It changed your experience. Mm-hmm. And so that was, so that, it, and there's nothing wrong with cleaning the garage, but maybe you bring the kids with you and have them help so that, or we divide the kids, or there's just a thought of, because I'm working, therefore I'm doing it by myself.
Right.
Let's move to people's questions.
Yeah. Hi, Erin.
Hi, guys. Thanks, Gemma, for being here. Thanks, Kathy and Todd, for bringing her. Mm-hmm. So can we talk resentment? just to toss it out there. My husband is amazing on many levels and like you, Todd, you know, he'll, I'm doing the dishes or I'm getting lunches ready. And meanwhile, I'm, you know, running around crazy or, you know, and as you guys mentioned on the podcast, June is so busy with everything. And having so much in the air and having to have my lists and then my list for him and then, you know, just trying to kind of get through, but then feeling like it's on me. And when I say things, I'm not always the best in how I say it. So just any thoughts, advice, tips on approaching it and getting, you know, you can't just get over resentment, but you kind of got to get through it. So any ways of going about that?
So I think resentment is a really big part of this conflict, but I think it's really important when you're having the conversations to not do it from that place of resentment. So the biggest thing for me is to make sure that when I am approaching him and having these conversations about what needs to change, that I am really being my best self in that moment, which is not how this started, obviously. The article was all about me having an absolute breakdown, like crying in the closet on Mother's Day and, you know, completely blaming him for everything that was happening. And I think it needs to be, when we have these conversations now, I start with, you know, I am expressing my needs here. And I need you to hear that from, you know, not a place where you get defensive, but a place where you are understanding that these are my needs and I need you to understand what's going on here. And so I think the resentment doesn't really go away until things start to change. Mm-hmm. You know, we dealt with the resentment a ways down the line once things were better. And I was able to talk to him about that and it wasn't a big issue anymore. But, you know, talking about the resentment, I don't know that that leads anywhere good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's self-awareness, which is obviously a foundation for what Zen Parenting Radio is about. Like, if you know you're going into an discussion with resentment, there's limited possibility that it's going to go well. And I would say to the guys that might be listening to this, you know, maybe some of the teammates who are women want to share this with the guys. When you pick up on this moment where you feel like you're not being treated fairly, or it's coming out of left field, or like all this stuff was piling up and she never said anything and now she's unloading on all of it. As the guy, it's important for you to keep your cool, and it's sometimes not so easy, but it's important to let your partner express themselves. And if you dig your heels in, it's hard not to, but if you can and you show up in the best way you can in those ugly moments, it's easy to love your partner when they're being loving. It's more difficult to love your partner when they're showing the uglier side of themselves. And I know that's not the right term, but if you can stay cool during that moment, they'll come around. And that takes practice.
Well, and one note is that yesterday when I brought things up, I was resentful when I brought it up. And then after I said some things, I said, okay, let me tell you where this is coming from. So the practice for me has been sometimes, and I don't know if resentful was the right thing. I was mad. I was angry. They're all kind of in the same world, right? It was kind of
it was a
fiery.
Lot of different things that contributed to what our discussion was yesterday. I was a part of it, but I was not all of it. But I was the only receiver of it. So
lucky
it wasn't
you.
All about me. It was partly about me. But the fact that you owned your piece, that is very
helpful.
Very helpful.
Even if there's even if it's all about Todd, me owning my resentment, cause Jenima's right. You don't get very far with it, you know, but if it comes out, own it, mm-hmm. Maybe say I'm resentful now. Let's talk later. Mm-hmm. You know, just own your piece.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Who's next?
So
let's try Annie. See if it works.
Let's give Annie another try. Hey there, Annie.
Yep.
Oh, yay.
It works.
Yay.
Hi, I've got a baby, sorry. So I liked in the book how you kind of talked about some of the other books you'd read about emotional labor and stuff. Like people just say you need to let things go, or I guess let go of having things done your way, but you didn't like that because you did things your way for a reason. Like it's because it helps things go smoother, even like things like Christmas, you know, Thanksgiving. There's a reason why you do all these things the way that you do them. So how do you kind of get that across? Because I know that with my husband in the past, like we've had a shift since I've had the baby in who gets my older daughter ready for school. And he's like, she doesn't need to have her hair done in the morning. It's fine. We're just going to get it out of her face. I'm like,
yeah.
So how do you... How do you kind of, help them see that or bridge it in a way where they don't get upset or just kind of push you off?
So, yeah, absolutely. And coming to shared standards is something I think is really important. So, for example, you know, saying, oh, well, her hair doesn't need to be done in the morning. Usually the reason it needs to be done, partly, you know, yeah, you don't want other parents, you know, judging you for your kid's hair. But I know with my daughter, her hair needs to be done because if it's not done, I'm the one brushing out the tangles at night and she's crying and it's a really big deal. So the hair does need to be done. And I would say, you know, in that moment when he says her hair doesn't need to be done, explain that. I mean, it might be a lot to explain in the moment. I totally get that. But I think that really helps them see, oh, there is a reason for this. And, you know, it makes sense to do it that way. And then if you find yourself having those moments a lot where you're constantly explaining the same things, or, you know, you feel like you have to justify every little thing, I would say, you know, then maybe have that sit down conversation and say, hey, you know, the way that I do things, I'm not just doing it because I want control or because I want things to be perfect. Can you trust me that I have, you know, thought about this and that I am doing things to make everything run smoothly and keep everyone comfortable? Because that is what this is about. It's about keeping our life running smoothly. It's about keeping our kids comfortable and happy. And I, you know, I need that level of trust where you know that if I ask you to do something, that it needs to be done, you know, and don't make me explain myself over and over again, because it does get exhausting to do that.
That's a great point. And I love the term shared standards. Maybe you shared that with us before, but I've since forgotten. So that's good language for me. But there's a balance in that too. I'm sure that there's a lot of people, forget about women, just human beings sometimes want things done their way to the point where it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to somebody else. The hair thing makes total sense to me. Like, yeah, I wouldn't want to untangle my kid's hair for a half an hour when it could have been taken 2 minutes in the morning if you just would have combed it out. Like, that makes sense. But there's times when, whether it's the husband or the wife, like, no, it's got to be done my way. There's a little bit of latitude. There's some gray area. You know, I don't know if this makes sense, but she would go to Mexico once every 18 months when our kids were real little. And I would always say, don't give me a list. Let me just figure this out. And I'm going to screw it up, but let me screw it up. So I just wonder, Gemma, if you can like speak to that a little bit in finding the balance between it all.
Yeah. So when I say shared standards, I mean shared standards. And a lot of the times there's this let it go attitude that anything that women want done a certain way, well, then that's your job. And I think there is some leeway there, but you're right, because there are things that we arbitrarily hold on to control of. And I think there are a lot of reasons for this. I talk a lot in the book about perfectionism and how our culture really conditions women to strive for perfectionism and to want their house to look this certain way, to want everything, you know, really to be perfect. And things don't need to be perfect, and it's an unattainable standard. So I think our work as women is, you know, usually to take a look at what am I doing that is really in line with my values, in line with my priorities, and actually keeps things running smoothly. Mm-hmm. I think that we can get caught in the weeds sometimes. But as a whole, as I was researching this book, you know, most of the standards that we adopt, we do so because it helps things run smoothly. And it's, you know, it is important work. It's something that we've thought deeply about, or at least, you know, come to the realization that this is the best way to do it. It doesn't mean we have to do the best way every time, but it does mean that we need to have this conversation with our partners about what makes sense and what they need to take on as their responsibility. And I totally let Rob check me on that when I'm, you know, one of the things was I have like a certain way of hanging up the towels in the bathroom, and he's like, this is the hill you want to die on? And I'm like, no, it's not, you know, whatever. If you folded the towels, they're folded. It's fine. You know, because I do have that where I'm particular about certain things, and it's either, you know, he was like, it's, you know, either leave the towels in the laundry room or I'll hang them up my way and it's going to be fine. So I think there is a little bit of leeway both ways, as long as you're having that conversation. Again, I think emotional labor is so much about communicating your needs, you know, having that conversation and showing up for each other.
My wife, Kathy, has a question.
Oh, it's actually not mine. It's from somebody who can't be here today, Gemma. So I thought this was really interesting, and I'm going to paraphrase what she's saying to kind of expand it. She asked a question about that her children, it's kind of similar, it's in the same vein as Kim's regarding teaching our children about emotional labor. And this team member was wondering, her daughter goes to a Catholic church or school, and she feels that a lot of things regarding emotional labor are reinforced. So when, or like in an educational
reinforced system. Reinforced the bad way.
Reinforced.
Yeah. Oh, I got that.
Yes. Yes. reinforced what traditionally occurs, and that in this Catholic school or in this Catholic church or in this educational setting or in this park district, it doesn't matter. What do you do when a system is reinforcing something that you're trying to shift at home?
Oh, so this is really hard for me because I grew up in a system like that. I went to a private Christian school and these things were very much reinforced to the extent that even after, you know, I did some, you know, personal growth in my 20s and, you know, kind of walked away from a lot of the things I believed as a child. Emotional labor, because our culture also reinforces it, you know, the culture at large, I thought totally normal. It should all be on me. And so this is really tricky. I would say you really have to counterbalance that. How much of it are they getting at school? You need to, you know, double down on how much you're talking about it at home. And, you know, you might want to think about is the school aligning with what you want to teach your kids? Is that really where you want them to be? Because if they are in a, you know, in a private Catholic institution, then you're making that choice to put them there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a really personal, tricky, big issue to work through. But it's one that I would really think hard about, because if they're going against what your family's values are, it might not be the place that you want your child.
Well, and I would just say, make sure it's your family values. We have some friends in town that their values are just what their parents' values are. You know what I mean?
Well, he's saying that, like, just like Gemma's point, they're like, I have to get my kid confirmed. I have to put them through.
Because grandma's going to
Because
freak.
Grandma will get mad. And they're not the only people I hear that from. I'm sure Gemma hears that all the time too. You know, people are like, I have to do this because I don't want my mom or my mother-in-law to freak out. And then that's a whole nother layer, right? Because Gemma, let's talk about this. How do we discuss this with the generation above us?
Oh, so... That's really hard because we've had some family conversations around the dinner table that don't
go well.
You know, it's funny because my aunts and my grandmother, they've read the book and they understand it, and they really connected with it in a certain way that the men did not. Mm. I think it was a really big moment for me when my grandma was like, we made it through the book, which meant that she had read it aloud to my grandfather.
Oh, geez.
And I was like, that is a whole new world for him. And, you know, I got some feedback that it was a hard process for him. There was a lot of times that we had to stop and walk away from it for a while and then come back to it. And the only reason he was coming back to it is because his granddaughter wrote it. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, it would be completely out of his wheelhouse. I'm trying to think, because I haven't really figured this out myself, yeah. If I'm being real honest.
Yeah.
We're working through it. And the biggest thing for me is, like, I have this book out there. And so it's kind of on the table. They know where we're at. They know what our values are based off of my writing. Mm. Not everyone has that. And so, I don't know, do you guys have any advice on that?
I don't have any advice, but Kathy had me listen to Sister Joan talk to Oprah. And Sister Joan is this 82-year-old woman, and she's a freaking warrior. And maybe it's because she's 82 and she has all this wisdom, but she basically has an I don't give a shit attitude about anything, because this feels right to me and I'm going to say it. Now, I don't know if that's good to do at the Thanksgiving, but lean into it a little bit. Be like, stand in your warrior, especially if your partner agrees with you. It, like, the whole, what was Ram Dass's quote? If you think you're enlightened, go home and spend a few days with your family, with your birth family. So I agree with you, Gemma, that this is a very, very tricky territory. But I just bring a little bit of balance to who's more important, what other people think of you, even if they're the most important people who brought you into this world, or what you think is your truth.
Well, and my balance with that is that Todd's mom passed away a few years ago, but she and I used to have this conversation before I had the language, Gemma. So I was probably like, I don't know how I was saying it. And she would say things like, you know, I didn't have the luxury of that, or, and his mom did do everything.
Yeah. Correct. She was a bulldog.
She was. And she, you know, she did everything. She was very masculine and feminine, you know, in traditional roles. And she would say, I had to do everything. I didn't have what you, because my sister and my sister-in-laws are very much like me. And she's like, I didn't have the luxury you guys did. And I would always validate that too. Like, you're so right. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of trying to fight my point, it was like, you're so right. And I said, I just feel like we have such an opportunity with this time to expand. Now I can use the word emotional labor. To expand what we look at and who takes on what, you know, but back then, like when I had babies, it was about changing diapers. You know, does Todd change diapers? And I'm like, well, yeah, you know.
I remember Kathy was in Mexico one time and
it sounds like I'm always in Mexico.
I brought my two toddlers to a party that was like an hour away. And you'd have thought that I was the Pope and Jesus and Superman because Todd brought his two kids to a party that was 45 minutes away.
Oh, you're so good. You're such a good dad.
And I will tell you, that did stroke my ego a little bit. I'm like, yeah, look at me.
He's like, I got another party. Can I take the kids?
Well, at the same time, I'm like, something's wrong here. Why am I getting this acknowledgement when Kathy does it all the freaking time? Like, what's up with that?
Oh, yeah. That is the way. So guys, we only have a little bit of time. So are there any other questions? Because if not, I will ask the other question that was emailed to me.
Dawn has
something. Dawn. All right. Go ahead, Dawn.
Hang on, Dawn. Let me unmute you.
Hi.
Are you there?
Hey.
Hi, Dawn.
Hi. Hi, Gemma. Hi, Kathy and Todd and everybody else. Mine's actually more of a confession, and it kind of backs off of what Aaron Kunkerga was saying about resentment. Can you hear me?
That's better. Yeah.
Sorry. Mine's more of a confession. It kind of backs off of what Aaron Kuhn-Kruger was saying with the resentment piece. I have avoided reading the book and I, because of the, my concerns about all of the feelings and emotions that would come up with it and not having a partner who would, in my mind, be necessarily open to doing anything about that. And I have a lot of other stuff going on right now with my family, but this is there and it's not going anywhere. And it's interesting the comment that you just made about your grandfather, because I feel like I'm the grandfather right now. And but in a weird way. It's not that I don't agree with it. It's I totally agree with it. It's that what it's bringing up is so hard for me right now. And it didn't occur to me to just take it in small doses. And I think that's what I'm going to do. So I really appreciate you sharing that story, because it's, I mean, maybe somebody has already said this, but this is probably going to go down as one of the most important books written about women for women in a really long time. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think anybody's ever discussed this before. And I know when I read your article online, I was just mouth on the floor. You said everything that's been going on in my mind and gave a voice to it. So thank you for writing it. And just being a part of the call today has really inspired me, along with your story, to just take some bites. digest slowly.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a really reasonable thing to do. I'm someone who usually devours a book, but there are some that I need to sit with. And so, you know, there are certain books that I have had to slow down with and read it a little bit at a time. And I have heard from a lot of people that if you relate to it really deeply and you feel like you are in this place, it can be a really difficult book to get through because of the anger, the resentment, there can be despair, hopelessness. There is a lot there. And so I know you said there are other things going on in your life. You know, you can either go the way of taking small doses of it, or you can wait until you're in a season of life when you
froze. We're muted.
Oh, okay.
There you are.
So Gemma, you're rocking it out, and then
you're like on the best.
It reminded me of Forrest Gump, because when he says in Vietnam, and then they pull the plug.
I know, we were like,
you can't hear what he said. So I feel like we could either ask her to repeat.
Well, she doesn't have to repeat exactly that, but I'll tell you where it froze. You were saying that you said there's a lot of things going on, and so maybe you should table it until that kind of calms down. Mm-hmm. And then that's when it froze. So I don't know if you said anything else that was like, you want to make sure you say again, but most of what you said came through. Like even when it started to freeze, I could still hear you, but then it just went away. So was there anything else besides that, Gemma, like after you said maybe you could table the book for a little bit?
Not really. I said either table it or take it in small doses if you feel like that's something you can handle. But you know, there's nothing wrong with saving that, because if it's going to be a big emotional experience, I have had to do that before with certain books where I'm like, I'm not ready for this right now. I'm going to set it aside until I am in a space emotionally, mentally, where I can work with it and the emotions it's going to bring up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's such a good question, Dawn. And even though it feels this way for you with emotional labor, there are books that have been sitting next to my bed that I'm like, I'm just not sure I'm ready to tackle that yet. So it's different for everybody. Like sometimes it's like, I'm already full. So, you know, it'll come.
It's a wonderful question. I never really thought about that. And I appreciate your vulnerability and your confessional saying, you know, there's part of your grandpa inside of you. So it's pretty cool. So we're going to quit while we are either ahead or behind. I'm not quite sure where we are.
And just so everybody knows, I know sometimes like it felt like when people were joining that you couldn't see people, but the audio has been really good. Mm-hmm. And this gets turned into a podcast. So for those of you who feel like you missed a part, or for the Team Zen people who are just going to get this in podcast form, the audio is really good. Mm-hmm. So Gemma, if we haven't told you a million times already, and I know we have, we so appreciate your work and you and your willingness to support this community and be on our show and just do what you do. And, you know, just thanks for being you.
Yes. Are you writing more books?
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm working slowly on a second one. We haven't pitched it yet. So I'm kind of slowly but surely doing the work on it, and hopefully that will happen in the next couple of years. We'll see how that goes.
Can't wait to read it.
Yeah, right now I'm getting ready for it to publish in foreign countries.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yes, that's awesome.
Oh, one thing I wanted to mention, I was messing on my phone over here. Yes, next phase. I know a lot of people have questions about kids and emotional labor. And one podcast that I listened to, and I made my husband listen to it, that was really good on, I think, kind of teaching those responsibilities and all of that to kids. They don't use the term emotional labor, but it's called Peaceful Parenting. That's the name of the episode, and it's on the Knowledge Project with Shane Parrish. It was a really good one. So
awesome.
If you want to add that to the notes.
Peaceful Parenting, the Knowledge Project.
All right.
Yeah, the Knowledge Project is the podcast. Peaceful Parenting is the episode. I think it's Dr. Laura Merkham, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, but it was great.
So, Gemma, just blessings and gratitude for you taking the time out twice in 2 weeks to help us out. You've gone above and beyond. Millie, thanks for posting that one. Guys, we have another...
Ladies
and gentlemen, we have another Zen Talk, I think, in about 11 days, something like that. So it's on the website. So thank you. Bless you.
Love you all.
Keep trucking. Be good. Gemma, let's stay in touch.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Knowledge Project. That's good.